You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. It wasn't that long ago that Detroit's riverfront was little more than aging industry, abandoned buildings, and parking lots. Today, the Detroit Riverwalk is always improving. A new book by John Hardig chronicles the history of the Detroit River and those recent changes. The title is Waterfront Porch. Sitting near the water with him, I started by asking Hardig what the Detroit River would have looked like before European settlement.
Think about the Detroit River as a connecting channel where all this water from Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, and Lake Huron flow through the Detroit River down to the lower lakes. But early settlers and Native Americans would have seen coastal wetlands, you know, a lot of wetlands along the shoreline, a nice riparian buffer habitat, and then lots of wooded area back then. So probably very much different than we have today.
Over the years, there were docks and wharfs built, everything from commerce to shipbuilding, and slowly the city began to encroach upon the river. So where would the river actually flow if we were going through the same place today?
So if you and I were walking along the Detroit Riverwalk, or even inland from the Detroit Riverwalk, on Atwater. Atwater is maybe, on some places, a quarter of a mile in from the Detroit River. So why did they call that water? It was at the water. So they took fill material from one of the forts in Detroit and put it in there. When the Great Fire of Detroit occurred, they put all that, the rubble, into there. And so you can imagine they filled these places along the shoreline with anything and everything. It was a working river in support of commerce and industry.
That continued for a very long time, more than a century. By 1948, I believe it was the year, there was a really cold winter that year. The waterfowl came, the ice was over the river most places, but there were a few places where they could land. What happened?
Yeah, so for millennia, you know, the waterfowl on their migration come south, and they head. And along the Detroit River, we have wild celery beds, especially for the ducks. And they would come in search of that because they need food for energy on their migration. So it's a spot to rest, it's a spot to feed. So it was a cold winter day and there were only a few pockets of open water. And this is now right after World War II, and there were no industrial and pollution controls on industry, and oil was coming into the river. At that time, they estimated 5.9 million gallons of oil and petroleum products were being discharged to the Rouge Detroit River on an annual basis. It takes 1 gallon of oil to pollute 1 million gallons of water. To put that into perspective, that was enough oil, 5.9 million gallons, to pollute the entire western basin of Lake Erie, all Michigan waters, all Ohio waters, all Ontario waters. So there's only a few pockets of open water. What's in the open water? Oil. The ducks come down, land, and 12,000 ducks and geese died in one event. And a group of duck hunters from the lower Detroit River, who cared about it, picked up those oil-soaked carcasses of ducks and geese, threw them in their pickup truck, drove to Lansing, Michigan, threw them on the sidewalk leading to the state capitol, threw them on the steps, went into the Capitol and said, "How dare you do this to the place where we're raising our families, where the place we call home, the place where we recreate." Those duck hunters now, fast forward, are credited today with starting the Industrial Pollution Control Program of Michigan.
It was a long haul, though, because this happened again in 60 and 67.
We had two more massive ones. We have a difficult time learning from history. You know, and we don't always do a good job of that. So we had to learn it back again in the 1960s and ratchet up regulations and have stronger enforcement programs. But then it started getting better after that.
Well, let's flash forward a little bit. It's a dark and dreary day, as you describe it, in the 1990s, or in 1990. You're in a window of the Renaissance Center taking a look out at the river's edge. What do you see?
You see first three sets of cement silos towering over the Detroit River. Then you see material storage piles where freighters came in with aggregate and limestone and salt. and then you see surface parking lots, and you see abandoned and dilapidated buildings. What a sight of just almost like a post-industrial waterfront that certainly underutilized, right? No public access. And how can we have that occur in this major city in the United States?
But you saw more, you and others saw more, you saw possibilities. What did you see?
We saw, just as going back to Mayor Pingree in the 1880s, you know, he wanted a linked riverfront parks project. There were lots of attempts, but none of them successful.
I should say that Hazen Pingree was probably Detroit's most popular mayor.
Most popular, did so much for so many, you know. And so it was our time, you know.
The why didn't it happen in that 100 years in between Pingree's proposal and the 1990s?
The perception of the Detroit River is that it was a working river in support of commerce and industry. They didn't think environment like we do today. And environment, natural resources were an afterthought. They weren't a priority. But today, now, with a cleaner river, people rediscovering it, oh my goodness, we have peregrine falcons, osprey, bald eagles, lake sturgeon, lake whitefish, mayflies, and even beaver. We have 6 beaver dens, and an amazing turnaround, one of the most remarkable ecological recovery stories in North America.
And this is after almost all of those animals were extirpated from this area.
They were literally all extirpated. We bald eagles and peregrine falcons and osprey tried to nest, but for 2 decades, because of eggshell thinning, because of organochlorine pesticides like DDT, Myrex, and Dieldrin, and things like that, they couldn't produce young. I mean, so they didn't survive, but they are back and they are flourishing. And people on the Riverwalk get to see these.
Well, let's talk about the Riverwalk, because that has been a recent development. You are one of the people who actually saw the possibilities, and you know, there are hundreds of people involved in this, probably thousands of people involved in this. We're not going to go through naming names through all of it, but how did that all come together?
So with the cleanup of the Detroit River and with strong interest in the public sector and the private sector to revitalize Detroit, you know, people started saying, well, why can't we have public access, greater public access to the Detroit River? And so momentum was building. And then a number of things happened. General Motors purchased the Renaissance Center, and the front door of the Renaissance Center was Jefferson Avenue. And it was this big, almost like a fortress kind of building. So they turned the front door of the Renaissance Center around and made a 5-story glass atrium called the Winter Garden. That is the new front door. UAW-GM Training Center, one of the largest training centers in North America, offered up a riverfront greenway. 2001, the tercentennial of the city of Detroit, put a historical marker for the Underground Railroad on the waterfront with a sister one right across the river looking at each other. So this all came together in an unusual way that gave the city confidence to move forward with a Blue Ribbon Committee and gave the public and private sector the opportunity to form a partnership and come together, create the Detroit Riverfront Conservancy, and the foundations then, like Kresge, gave the single largest gift in the history of their foundation at that time of $50 million to kick it off. So that was the catalyst. It was a confluence of several different things, and not, I can't point to one thing.
You mentioned that the Detroit Riverwalk is being built as sort of a necklace, with the strand of the necklace being the Riverwalk itself, but there are beads along the way. What do you mean by that?
The Beads are some really cool places, like Mount Elliott Park, with a sunken schooner in the land with water cannons, and it's free for all kids and families to go and to enjoy the outdoors, to fish there, to play in the water park. And there's you've got Gabriel Richard Park, you've got Cullen Plaza. What's coming is the new Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Centennial Park. So these unique destinations on the Riverwalk are the Beads, and then the Strand is of course the Detroit Riverwalk.
I want to talk about the Millikan State Park just a little bit, because it's a natural area right in the heart, or right on the, as you say, the waterfront, the front porch of the city.
Yes. So when we started that project, to get the state interested, there is no state park in the city of Detroit at that time, right? So could the state, the Michigan DNR, build something there, a state park, that would engage people and be almost like a gateway to state parks throughout the state? So in the early planning phase, you have to dream, right, and say, what's possible here? Could we collect stormwater off of Atwater, off some of these parking lots, instead of it going into a storm sewer, which just goes right into the Detroit River, could we put it into an innovative stormwater treatment system where there's a deeper basin where it comes in first and some of the heavier things like sediment settles out? Then it goes into sort of a emergent and submergent marsh area where plants take up nutrients and clean the water naturally. Then it goes into the Detroit River. But most importantly, this would have a really unique shape, and the Riverwalk would undulate along it and go over it, and kids can touch the water. And so now you get to see muskrat, and you get to see red-winged blackbird, and you get to see all turtles and frogs, and you can get up close with it and reconnect children with nature.
You mentioned the Millikan State Park was the first state park in Detroit. How are we going to get people who live in the city to get involved in natural resources?
We need most people in urban areas, Detroit and other places, are disconnected from the outdoors and from natural resources. One of our goals is to reconnect people with the Detroit River and with wildlife and give them a compelling experience that is fun. They might learn something along the way, hopefully inspire a sense of wonder. Today, 80% of all the people in the United States and Canada live in urban areas. Where's the next generation of conservationist, environmentalist, sustainability entrepreneur going to come from? It's going to probably come from urban areas. We are placing a high priority on inspiring a sense of wonder and a conservation ethic in the next generation so that they can not make the mistakes that our generation made.
You mentioned the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Centennial Park. Right now it's been used as a concert venue a couple of times. But what are the far-reaching plans for that area?
Far-reaching would be to think of our history. We talked about it a little bit as Detroit River being a connecting channel. And so it's like a lot of it has concrete breakwater and steel sheet piling. So it's pretty straight and then curves on the bend of the river and goes down to Lake Erie. But there's not a lot of places where fish, young fish, can get nursery habitat, can go into a cove and rest and feed maybe a little bit on their journey, either up to Lake St. Clair or down to Lake Erie. So we're going to do a cove, a 3 to 4 acre cove in there, which was like a little embayment off the Detroit River. And in there will be a beach where kids can touch the water, go in and swim. There will also be wetland habitat, riparian habitat. There will be some soft shoreline engineering, so it'll be a net gain in habitat for the river as well. Then this incredible opportunity to engage kids in all of that, in learning. So there'll be learning stations. There'll be this playscape. There'll be two pavilions, one for like basketball and outdoor recreation and another one with food and restroom facility, and all then connected to the Riverwalk and connected up into the neighborhoods.
Now, your book, Waterfront Porch, is ostensibly about the Detroit River being open to residents again, having access to it. But the last section of the book talks pretty optimistically about connections to places like Campus Martius and the Eastern Market. Tell me how this all works together and why the riverfront is important to it.
One of the greatest things to happen was the DeQuinder Cut, to think about that. And this is a below grade, that means like sunken down, and it was a rail line, right? And so they were able to acquire half of that. Half of it they want to keep so they don't preclude future options. They could still have some light rail or something along there. But half of it went and build a connection, an immediate connection to Eastern Market, to Midtown, Wayne State University, and the New Center area. So all of a sudden, you connect all that. And the usage of that is amazing, you know, right now. And that is a foretaste of where we're going. So Joseph Campo, that ends up at Stroh River Place, that's the next one you're going to see. It's the same kind of thing. It's sort of like, think of a tentacle coming off the Riverwalk and going into the neighborhoods to reconnect, you know, children and families back to the Riverwalk. And then there's another one coming called May Creek that'll go up from Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Centennial Park and head towards the Ford, the old train station, and go into Mexican Town. So what a great way of connecting people back to the river and making places that are very special for both people and wildlife.
John Hartig is the author of the new book, Waterfront Porch, Reclaiming Detroit's Industrial Waterfront as a Gathering Place for All. Thanks for meeting with me.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, Lester.
We sent Stateside's Tad Davis to the Detroit Riverwalk to ask people what they think of the changes on the riverfront.
The changes that's happened on the riverfront is good for bringing in new people. I like that, you know, people can walk around, and I like the multiculturalness of it. But I feel like the people that's native to Detroit, they don't actually get a chance to see the changes that's happening to downtown riverfront because they are not informed.
It's absolutely beautiful. I come here every Friday at 6 a.m. I get the sunrise. It is fantastic. There's so much going on down here. They have free yoga in the summer. They have a wonderful reading program for kids. It's just a good deal. You go to Mount Elliott Park. They got the little water park. I love the feeling of the greenery and being out and open. I love it here.
A lot of African Americans don't come down here like that. The African Americans that you see down here, they come from other cities. The African Americans, so-called, are still back there, and they've never felt welcome down here back in the day. But now it's so much to do and everything, they can come down here with no problem, and for some reason they won't. You know, so it's a mindset. Then you got people like me and that's accepting this and knowing that we have to grow.
That was Del Rio Le Courtier, Mary Davis, and Michael Newsom sharing their two cents on the changes made to the Detroit Riverwalk. That's the show for today. I'm Lester Graham. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.